Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, everyone. Before we start, I just wanted to apologize. Apparently, my microphone was not working correctly during the recording that you're about to hear, which is heartbreaking because I love this conversation so much. So please stick with us if you can. I had a backup going, so at least you'll be able to hear something. It's not up to the standards that I would like, honestly, but at least it's something. So sorry about that again, and stick with us if you can. Thanks so much for listening, and here's the episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today's Friday, November 22nd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about John M. Chu's newest movie, Wicked Part 1. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Listen, if it wasn't because it's really early when we're recording this, my usual hi-hi-hi-ya was absolutely going to be replaced by a defying gravity battle cry, but I just don't got it in me this morning.
I'm sorry about that, BJ. Yes, you very kindly maneuvered your schedule to be able to accommodate for some work that's going on at my house. So I thank you for that, and our listeners, thank you for that. Okay, so we're going to be talking about this movie. Before we do that, though, BJ, before I even tell you what I thought about this film, I want to sort of set the stage for what our relationship is to Wicked, the musical, before we saw this film. And mine is pretty simple. My sister loves musical theater. She participated in a lot of musical theater growing up. So this was a big musical for her. And I want to say that I saw a traveling, like a regional production of it in like 2006 or something like that. And that's really the only time that I have kind of engaged with the story. Like, of course, I've heard Defying Gravity a handful of times in the years since then, just like, you know, in out in the world or whatever. But this is not really a project that I hold near and dear to my heart or anything. I enjoyed the show when I saw it, but I haven't really, it's not like one of my things. So I think you have a little bit of a different relationship to Wicked. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So I tragically did not get to see Wicked on Broadway. Bummer for me. But I did see it when it had a residency in Chicago from, I think, 2005 to 2009. I saw it multiple times. I am a musical theater kid, and I am a big belty musical theater kid, so I have a very deep relationship with pretty much anything Idina Menzel has ever sang because it fits in my register, which makes me feel happy. But I was actually talking about this with a friend the other night where we have conversations all the time as critics and as film people about movies that we are just hardwired to not like. Like, there are so many people that are like, I just don't like horror movies. I'm never going to like horror movies. And we accept that about them. But we seldom talk about it when it's in the other direction, where I am just hardwired to like Wicked in all of its forms. And I'm okay with that.
Okay, so yes, you definitely are coming at this with more of a place of love than I was. And I have to say that the odds were kind of stacked against this movie for me going in, because the marketing campaign and the whole press cycle around the film has become so big that I've found it like a little obnoxious. I wasn't crazy about any of the trailers for this. I was annoyed that they split it into two movies, and I was extremely annoyed that part one was 2 hours and 40 minutes long when I saw that runtime. But I loved this movie. There's something.
Yes.
it really got me. I was a little iffy about the first big musical number where Ariana Grande's character flies in and kind of sings with the Munchkins, because she was singing in such a high key or register or whatever that I couldn't understand the lyrics that she was singing. And mm-hmm. I was kind of worried about what I was in for, but I did not have that problem the whole rest of the movie. And it really won me over in a huge way. So what did you think about Wicked?
Oh yeah. I was immediately regressed to being like a 17-year-old finding out she was going to get to sing the Defying Gravity single in the last choir concert of my senior year. Like, it was a huge deal, Ben. I don't know if you understand the cutthroat world of high school theater and choir, but it was a big deal. Whoever got to sing Defying Gravity at the end, like, that was basically the teacher saying, yeah, you're really the best one in class, and I got it. So yeah, I regressed into that person pretty much immediately. I will say Ariana Grande, who has such like a gorgeous tone to her voice, when she is in that upper register, her enunciation kind of disappears, but that's an issue that she has even as a pop star. But that song, just like No Mourns a Wicked, like that sort of is kind of always a problem for whoever sings Glinda, because it's so deliriously positive and high that you don't fully understand what's happening. But other than that, like, oh my God, yeah, I got transported. I was not crying. That's just the Ozda's ballroom in my eyes there. No, I was a mess. I was weeping during that scene. The second Defying Gravity hit, I was just crying. I was like, oh my God. I did not realize how badly I had been waiting for this adaptation.
Yeah. And I mean, we should say it's been in the works. Our movie version has been talked about basically since the musical, like the stage version came out. It's taken them so long to get this off the ground. And it's a really interesting time for this movie to finally be coming out because of some of the stuff we'll talk about in the spoiler section of like things that feel relevant to today, even though this was written over 20 years ago. But yeah, just a really fascinating thing. So I saw a double feature of Gladiator 2 and Wicked last night and thought that I was like going into that experience, I was like, well, I'm going to love Gladiator 2 and Wicked is just going to be kind of this annoyance that I put up with because of how all the things that I said before about the movie being stacked against or the odds being stacked against it. And I came out really feeling apathetic about Gladiator 2 and being fully in love with Wicked. Like, this is one of my favorite movies of the year. I don't know if it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be my number one, but it's definitely in my top 10. It's an incredible movie. I loved it so much. So, all right. So I guess before we get into some spoiler stuff, like let's just talk, I guess broadly about any general aspects of the movie. The thing that I wanted to mention that I was maybe the most surprised by was how tactile most of the sets feel.
Oh God. Yeah.
Like there's a ton of CG in this movie, but there's also real people moving around on real sets, like dancing and spinning and jumping and doing choreographed moves and stuff. And I think the trailers kind of made the whole thing just look like a CG blob, you know? And I think John M. Chu is very good at directing stuff like this. He has a real eye for motion and he knows how to direct the audience's eyes to specific parts of the frame. And I think some of that has to do with literally the blocking of the scenes, but some of it I think has to do with the editing. Like for the most part, the shots seem to just flow into each other really well. So what did you think about the look and the flow of the movie, I guess?
Oh, it's so gorgeous. And I love that, you know, like In the Heights before it, John Shu understands that like it's okay for a movie musical to look like a stage musical. It's okay to have, you know, intentional blocking. And that really sells this to me in ways that I think some other movie musicals just don't, because they want to be movies that happen to have songs. And this is like, no, this is a musical, and the stage musical and the spectacle is so important that I want that to be a part of this movie. I mean, like, part of like Cynthia Erivo flying is she's literally on a practical crane for a lot of it. And that is a, you know, a callback to the stage show, which I think is really, really cool. And the only beef that I really have visually is that sometimes I think the lighting washes out some of the scenes. And I've been trying to fall down some rabbit holes to figure out why this is happening with so many just like modern movies in general. I think it has something to do with combining like blue screen and practical and like having to hide some of the seams. So the lighting is so bright that like shadows no longer exist, which looks a little wonk sometimes. But just this is such a feast for the eyes. And yeah, the practical sets are incredible. Like, there's clear, like, set painting going on. There's just a lot of these, like, old Hollywood in-camera tricks that we don't see anymore. And I very recently watched The Wizard of Oz for the first time in, like, years. And the stuff that they pull off in that movie is truly mind-boggling, especially when you think that it was, like, 1939. And the same thing happened with Wicked, where I was, like, watching things. I'm like, we don't do this often. If this were any other director, this whole movie would be nothing but a blue screen. It would be like a Marvel movie, and it would look awful.
Yeah, I was just thinking of, there's a scene in Guy Ritchie's version of Aladdin where that's a big musical live action adaptation as well. And there's just something about, I don't know why I'm picking on that movie, but that was the first thing that came to my mind in terms of, like, comparing it to recent things or relatively recent things that have come out, where, like, there's something about that just feels like they have a set, but it's only 10 feet by 10 feet wide. And, like, there's a very limited feel to the scope of that movie, because the rest of it feels like there's CG set extensions everywhere. And again, I'm not saying that that's not happening here, but the difference in my mind, in my memory of Aladdin and what's happening in Wicked Part One, is that the physical space that these actors are allowed to occupy is so much bigger than a lot of the other contemporary musicals that are being made today. So that it makes it feel like you can tell when there's real people versus when there are, you know, CG digital doubles or whatever, like filling in extras and crowd space and stuff like that. There's something about the way that these dancers are moving that you can tell that these people spent a lot of time working on this and choreographing this. And, like, there's just enough imperfection in some of the motion to convince me that this is real. So,
oh yeah. I mean, and the camera moves so fluidly between these giant, like, choreography set pieces. And I hate to give him credit, but it reminded me a lot of, like, seeing Harry Potter for the first time, where it's like Hogwarts feels like a real school. Shiz feels like a real school. And, you know, these big places like the Emerald City or Munchkinland, like, they feel like tangible places that I could go visit right here and now, the same way that a lot of the worlds in Harry Potter feel. And I think that's what is missing in movies like Aladdin, where I don't feel like I can visit that place. My brain reminds me this is a movie, but there are moments in Wicked where I like fully feel like, oh, if that was a theme park, I could go visit that tomorrow. 100%. Yes.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. It certainly, there are some aspects of it that feel like a tangible theme park that you could walk through for sure. So the thing that, I mean, you know, I mentioned the sort of tactility, and that was one of the big things that rose to mind in terms of what I wanted to talk about for this conversation. The other thing is that Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande are just lights out in this movie, like unbelievably good. What Grande is able to do with the physical comedy of the Glinda character is just pitch perfect. And then Cynthia Erivo not only has the vocal ability to pull off all these songs, but the way that she is able to let us see these cracks start to form in this protective wall that she's constructed around herself is so effective and affecting. I was so taken by their work in this film. I thought they were unreal.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, and I say this with absolutely no shade to, you know, people that I love, like Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Yeoh, but they do feel like a little bit of celebrity stunt casting in this, and it is more evident when you have Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande just unbelievable in their performances. And Ariana, for sure, like, she's giving a little bit of Kristen Chenoweth in the physicality, which I like, but there's still something that very much feels like her characters from when she was younger. I don't know if you're super familiar with her, like, Nickelodeon work, but there is something very, like, Kat was her character on Victorious and Sam and Kat, where it's a little flighty, but also, like, well-meaning, that is kind of sprinkled in here. I'm like, oh, I like that. I like seeing that, because Ariana Grande does have this, like, really beautiful story of, she was in 13 on Broadway when Wicked was launching, and she told Kristen Chenoweth as, like, a 13-year-old, I want to play Glinda someday, and now she gets to. And so seeing her, like, honor the performance that made her fall in love with the show, I think is really lovely. And then as far as Cynthia or Erivo is concerned, like, one, vocally, she's unreal. I don't know if you've ever seen her do performances from The Color Purple, but like, it's mind-blowing. She's so talented. Mm-hmm. But the things about her is, so one, she had a lot of say in what Elphaba was going to look like, which included having the micro braids so that, you know, her hair very much is still the hair of a Black woman despite being green. But also it's still long, so it's honoring, you know, the traditional look of Elphaba. And she also included like freckles because she wanted it to look like this isn't just somebody wearing makeup, but like, no, her skin is green, and her fingernails, because Cynthia Erivo is like, she is a nail goddess. If you've seen any of her press tour stuff, her nails are very elaborate and they're lovely. But she wanted to incorporate that into this design to pay, you know, homage to Margaret Hamilton having these like very pointed, like talon-like fingernails. And so I like how much these characters feel like they belong to the actors. And Cynthia Erivo was doing something so interesting in her voice that, of course, it's powerful in The Wizard and I because it requires it. But she's carrying so much of the first half of this movie on like the top of her voice, where it is just a little bit lighter. It's a little bit softer. And then by the time she gets to Defying Gravity, she's pulling it down lower. It's bigger. It's fuller. And it's like, oh, Elphaba has found her voice. Like, she's taking us on an arc with the way she's using her voice, which I don't think a lot of vocalists are, you know, capable of doing. And she is like, I can't stop thinking about how she uses her voice, because she has, she could have came out the gate, like, belting her face off, and she didn't. She, like, restrained herself until the end, and I was like, oh my God, you're a genius. Like, you're so good.
Yeah, I definitely did not pick up on that, but I'll have to, when I rewatch this movie, I'll have to notice how the voice evolves that way.
Like, listen to recordings of her doing other shows, or she's got some, like, great performances at the Kennedy Center, and like really like immerse yourself in knowing how powerful her voice can be. And then when you rewatch it, you'll be like, oh my God, she's holding back. I mean, obviously the end note in The Wizard and I is so good. Like, I don't know if your theater did this, but mine did, where it sort of, everyone forgot that they were watching a movie and not a stage production. So anytime there was a big number, everyone started clapping, which I really liked. But that was one of them where everyone was like, God damn, she's great. Big claps.
Yeah.
But yeah, by the time she got to Defying Gravity, I was like, oh, there it is. There, you found your voice. There it is.
The only other thing that I wanted to mention before we get into spoilers is, I think I'm always going to be a sucker for the obnoxious, blustering prince type character, like Gaston from Beauty and the Beast, Chris Pine and Billy Magnuson's characters in Into the Woods. Like, I know it's basic, but I'm just very entertained by that archetype for whatever reason. So the Fiero character and that whole subplot just really worked for me. I thought it was great.
Oh, and Jonathan Bailey is so, so talented. He's ridiculous. Like, he's one of those actors where he comes out as, like, when they announced him as Fiero, I was like, oh yeah, you were built in a lab to play Fiero. Like, you're so good at this. And I hope that this is going to be kind of the way that West Side Story was for both Rachel Zegler and Mike Feist. I hope that Jonathan Bailey, like, starts getting way more work, because everyone's like, oh, no, you have the most charisma in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into some spoilers for Wicked Part 1.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
Okay, so I forgot this story was about somebody getting radicalized, BJ. That's the whole thing. Like, she sees her teacher being rounded up by these jackbooted thugs, and while everybody else seems willing to just sit by, she reacts with the necessary moral outrage and then actually puts her money where her mouth is by selflessly using her one wish with the wizard to not de-greenify herself, but to help the animal creatures of Oz. And I alluded to this earlier, but like, unfortunately, that still feels extremely relevant to what's happening in the world today. And especially the aspects about the wizard and Madame Morrible, like these people in charge manipulating the public and finding a scapegoat for behaviors that they themselves are engaging in, mm-hmm. especially in the last couple weeks, for this movie to come out right now, it's just a really interesting time for that. So I don't know how any of that stuff hit you as somebody who has been a fan of this show for a long time, if that stuff was top of mind for you or what. So tell me about your reaction on that front.
Oh, yeah. And so something that I've been seeing from a lot of like critics is who are not familiar with the show is they're like, I feel like they should be doing more with this story because it is so politically charged. And I will say that that has been a criticism from the book to stage adaptation, because I don't know if you've read the book that Wicked is based on. It is dark. Like, it is very, very dark. And a lot of those edges have been sanded off for the stage production. So that's, of course, what we're getting as the basis for the script in the movie. I'm very curious to see, since they're going to have to pad out part two with some runtime, I'm very curious to see if some of the elements from the book that were left out are going to get put back in. But yeah, I had a feeling when I watched this, I was like, I'm going to feel some kind of way when I hear the wizard admit that one of the great ways to unite the people is to give them like a common villain, because I'll get on my soapbox and then immediately step down. That is 1000% what the conservatives are doing with trans people right now. And obviously my wife is trans, so I feel a lot of feels about this. Okay, back off of my soapbox. and so I knew that that was going to hit me in a way that I was bracing myself for, which I did. And I got through that. And then when she still defies it and is like, no, I'm not going to, you know, do what you asked me to do. I'm not going to use my powers for evil. You'll have to kill me, basically. I'm like, oh God, the tears, they flow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really, really powerful stuff. I thought Peter Dinklage did a great job with a character that I think otherwise could have been, I don't know, something of a joke, like, and the CG was pretty decent for that character. Like, there are a lot of CG characters in this show, or this movie, rather. And for some reason, it just didn't bother me. Like, it wasn't exactly like, oh my God, this goat is photorealistic or whatever. It just kind of, like, worked with the context of what was going on. I can't really explain why, but, like, in Gladiator 2, for example, there's a scene where Paul Mescal's character fights a bunch of baboons in not the Colosseum, but like some other arena. And it looks terrible, like so embarrassingly bad. And I'm not trying to throw the VFX people under the bus, because we all know that the conditions that they have to work under are like extremely difficult and probably not fair and not what they want at all. But my God, I could not believe how bad some of the CG was in Gladiator 2. And then comparing that to, like, it stands out in that movie in a way that the CG absolutely does not stand out to me in Wicked. So I just wanted to praise that aspect of it.
Oh yeah. I was really impressed, especially with the scene where the flying monkeys get their wings, because obviously the Planet of the Apes movies have set the standard for what CG chimps, apes, orangutans, what they're going to look like. And they obviously aren't dedicating quite as much time for the flying monkeys, but they still looked like real, and I connected like with their emotions and their faces. So when the wings start sprouting and he looks actually in pain, like immediately I have so much empathy for this poor monkey.
yeah definitely. And then just in terms of another Gladiator 2 comparison, that movie is shorter than Wicked Part 1, but it felt so long. It felt like it was just trudging through molasses, because so much of Gladiator 2, and the reason I'm talking about this is because I don't think we're going to devote a whole episode to it later on. And the reason for that is because Gladiator 2, it just, so much of it feels like a rehash of the first movie, that I was just kind of like, okay, let's get on with it. Like, show me something new, something interesting. Because otherwise it just feels like we're just going through the motions and just repeating the same exact formulas, same beats. And like, because this is supposed to be Maximus' son going through the same stuff, it just kind of feels like, really? Like the son goes through the exact same thing. Like, I understand the idea of like generational trauma and the, you know, things being passed down and like repeating themselves, cycles repeating themselves or whatever, but like this is kind of ridiculous. And then this movie is longer than that. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes, which I was like extremely annoyed by, but it felt like it was over in a flash. It just did not feel that way at all. The thing really moves super well, I thought.
Yeah, I have a piece going up sometime today, the day we're recording this, defending the decision to split it, because I was very much with you. I was like, why are they splitting it? This seems way too long. And then after I saw part one, I was like, no, I get it. I understand why they're splitting it. I think that was the right call. It's still not going to be for everybody, but I do think that it was smart. And I mean, going to Gladiator 2, there is also something that I would say is like borderline Dr. Sleep happening with Wicked, in that The Wizard of Oz is arguably the most watched movie in history. Like, people know that movie, know everything about that movie, even if they've never seen it. It is the most like culturally probably important movie that we have. And it's because it's, you know, a family film and whatever, whatever. And so there are so many aspects of that 1939 movie that have been injected into this because he doesn't want to make this, like, this isn't Oz the Great and Powerful, where it's just like another Oz story, but it's very removed from what came before. Like, this is incorporating visual elements to it. I mean, One Short Day has a dance sequence that looks like it's plucked from The Wiz. Like, this movie understands the history and the legacy of all of the Oz stories that came before it and is trying to put it all together into like this cohesive narrative where it does make sense that this would be the prequel going into The Wizard of Oz. And I think that that is just so hard to do, as we've seen with like Gladiator 2 sort of feeling just like a rehash. Whereas this, like, even the moments that are, you know, very much on the nose references, they're in a way that feels like very cheeky and very cute, and it makes sense to me. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Yeah, it does. The one thing that I think kind of stuck out that's maybe adjacent to what you're talking about is the Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel cameo that happens in Wicked Part 1.
I was crying my eyes out.
Well, there's a moment where, you know, they come on screen and they sing with the characters and everything seems great, and they like descend below a stage that they're on. And I was like, that was really well done. That was like exactly the amount that I would want to see these characters or these actresses and these performers interacting. Like, that was just a really nice touch that they did there. And then for some reason they come back up and then the scene extends, and like, I was just kind of like, okay, by the end of this was maybe like a little much for me. But yeah, I could see how that would be certainly a big moment for people who care a lot about this stage show.
I wish that I could have put like a camera on my theater, because people erupted when it happened. Because it was a press screening. And at this point, you know, we knew that they were at the premiere and we knew that they had been talking about like, oh my God, this movie's so great, you all need to go see it. But it had not been confirmed yet that they were going to be there. Now it's like on IMDb and people are talking about it. But what's actually, okay, I'm going to actually press back on myself a little bit. I've been following down like the Wicked rabbit hole on TikTok to see how people are talking about it. And TikTok is notorious for being like, here's a whole movie in 72 really shitty clips that I've taken. Yep. So many people are not giving away that reveal. And I'm like, oh, are we learning something, children? Have we learned that you should probably not do that? And instead, they're recording their friends reacting to the moment happen, which I'm like, okay, still put your fucking phone away. But also, yeah, like, I'm glad you're recording each other and not the screen for once. So that's been very, very interesting. The thing that really got me, though, with their cameo, because I do think that it's very cute, and I do think that it is, you know, such a gift to everybody who loves the show. But you do get to hear Idina do her version of the battle cry, and she's performing it for Cynthia Erivo's Alphabet to Hear. And I think musically that is so smart,
because then what that does is the same way that, you know, somebody will hear a little bit of a song in one part of the movie and then incorporate that part of the song later, it very much feels like, oh, this Elphaba heard that, you know, riff in the Emerald City and is now taking it, making it her own, adding onto it because she does modify it a little bit and turning it into a battle cry. And it feels like sonically a passing of the torch between these two Elphabas. And I was like, this is genius. I love this.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't think about that as like an in-universe reason for why she sings the song the way she does. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I wanted to touch on before we get into Defying Gravity at the very end. Oh, I was going to ask you about the reaction to the movie because I saw it very late last night. I saw a 9 p.m. showing and I got home at like just after midnight and then went to bed, woke up this morning and started working basically. So I haven't read anything at all about the movie or any of the reactions to it or anything. So you saw this film a little while ago. So I'm wondering what the response has been. Like, I'm sure it's been pretty positive on TikTok, but like critically speaking, have you seen any complaints about the movie that you agree with or any pieces where you're like, well, yeah, they got a point on that one or anything like that?
Sure. So the big thing is that like Wicked right now overwhelmingly is being met with positive reviews by critics. I think it's somewhere floating between like 89, 92 in that range. So it's, you know, it's certified fresh. It's got all of that fun stuff. I think the popcorn meter, as they call it, is like a 98. Oh, Jesus. Like it's way, way up there. Yeah, I just looked it up. Okay. So it is currently at an 89% with 221 critic reviews. And then it is at a 98% with over 5,000 verified reviews. So people love it. I mean, as far as critiques that I've heard that I agree with, I do think that A Sensitive Man is still like the weakest part of Act One, but I feel that way about the show. That has nothing to do with Jeff Goldblum. I do think that like the shadow play behind the psych is really cute. I think that's like a very cute way to, you know, make that song more visually interesting because the song itself sucks. It's the one that I skip when I listen to the cast album anyway. So that's not really his fault. That's just the show's fault. I mean, the main critiques that I agree with, I agree that some of the scenes, especially at Shiz, when they're, especially like if they're in the outdoor, like courtyard area of Shiz, is so washed out and millennial gray. And I just can't, it's so hideous compared to how beautiful some of the rest of this movie is. And then a lot of people, I think they think that it's like a poor introduction to the sort of story if you're not already familiar with it, because the problem that exists in adapting a lot of musicals to the screen is that musicals tend to go at like a breakneck pace and everybody's prepared for that and understand like, yeah, we're going to like pave over a lot of stuff because storytelling is told through song. I get that. But I also don't care. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, I just don't care. And in the same way that, like, I think it was Jamie Loftus from the Bechdel cast who tweeted something where she's like, I was at the theater watching Wicked, and I was watching this girl lean over and whisper lore plot and all these things to her boyfriend throughout the entire movie and like catching him up to speed. And she was like, you know, after 20 years of, you know, boyfriends doing this to people for Marvel movies, like, oh, I feel so vindicated right now. Yeah, like Wicked is very much a movie that feels like it was made for the people who love Wicked. I don't think that it is super interested in like bringing in like new fans to the fold. I truly don't. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. Like, I think that it is absolutely accessible to those who are not familiar with this world at all. But I think that they prioritize people who are. And again, I kind of don't care because I don't want to say that it's like Barbie. I don't want to say that at all. But it is very similar to Barbie where it's like, no, this is so much more interested in catering to the people who love it and appreciate it than it is trying to like appease the masses, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, at least that's an approach. You know, when you try to appease to a broader group, you end up sanding off some of the stuff that makes the original thing interesting. So I'm glad that they didn't try to make as I'm sure they're trying to hit as broad an audience as possible, but I'm glad that the final product doesn't feel that way. So
oh yeah, like the Ozdust Ballroom I think is the best example of this, where like if you're watching that on stage, it is so much shorter. It is, you know, the big turning point where Glinda and Elphaba like start to, you know, be friends and have that. And it is really quick on the stage. And then in the movie, it goes on for so long. And like, you really feel that emotional weight and it feels more grounded in how a relationship or a friendship or this turning point would actually feel in real life. And for me, I was like, oh yeah, that is perfect. Like, that's what that needed to be. We are getting to see that moment the way that we should have always been able to see that moment. But like, you can't do that scene and let it last for that long on stage. Like, you just can't. Like, it would feel, it would just drag. But in the movie, because you get to see the close up of their faces and the tears running and the reactions to from other people, like, you can beef that up and it makes total sense. And it's like, I don't know if other people are gonna like be as mesmerized by that. Like, if by chance Cynthia Erivo ends up with like, you know, an Oscar nomination or something for this movie, I know that like Defying Gravity is going to be the moment that is going to be her like, you know, package when they do the video or whatever, but it should be the Asdas Ballroom. Like, it's so good. It's so good. And I don't know if that's going to like hit nearly as hard the people who are unfamiliar, but again, who cares?
Yeah, that's well said. All right. So the last question I have before we talk about Defying Gravity is, what do you think about part two? Like, is there any way that part two is as good as this? Because my wife and I were talking about this and she saw the show, I think in 2010 ish or something, and had the score there. I mean, the soundtrack and everything. And I was remembering songs from this movie, like as they were coming up, I was like, oh yeah, this one. Oh yeah, this one, whatever. But I don't actually remember what happens in the back half of the story because I saw the stage show so many years ago. But everything that I've heard is that all the good songs are front loaded in part one. So I'm just kind of like, how braced should I be for like massive disappointment in part two? Because if all the good stuff was here and I loved this, what do we have to look forward to? Not necessarily like plot wise, but like, do you think that there's a chance that Wicked Part Two could be as good as this?
So this is correct. The songs that most people know are from part one, and that's because they're the songs like, you know, Popular and Defying Gravity, the ones that are like sung the most by other people. Part two is a little bit more serious, and a lot of the more serious songs are not the songs that people sing a lot because they're lore heavy or there's weight from the previous actions that are kind of hanging on them, save for one exception, which is Glinda and Elphaba's duet for Good. And For Good is, if you have ever been at like a high school graduation, you've probably heard For Good. Did I sing this at my graduation? Yes, I did. 100%. I also sang this at like going out pageants. Like, For Good is one of those kinds of songs. So like, that is something we'll absolutely look forward to. But part two is a bit more serious. It's a bit heavier. And so I think that's why people don't remember it as much, because it's not like the fun half, it's the more serious half. And I am very curious to see if they do pad out the time for part two with some of the stuff from the book that is not there, or some of the characters that appear in the stage production of part two, but we don't actually spend a lot of time with, but we know that they're there. Wink, wink. I don't want to spoil it for people who don't know, because I think people who don't know are going to be like, oh damn, and like be really hype about it. But I don't want to spoil that, but it's pretty obvious. This is a prequel. We know how prequels work. But if they do something with that, I think people will be really into it and they'll be okay that this isn't as familiar as part one.
Okay. All right. So I think there's something scientific about the way Defying Gravity works on me. I don't know exactly how it works, but I really think that there's some sort of combination of notes in a specific order paired with these lyrics that somehow manages to give me chills and make me cry literally every single time that I listen to it. Like, that's how I know that it's not just an emotional reaction that I'm having, because it causes a physical sensation pretty much regardless of my mood or anything else that's going on. So what did you think about, I mean, this gigantic climactic number that ends the first act of the stage show and serves as the big final moment of this movie. What did you think about the execution of that scene as a whole?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so there are a couple of moments where the flying looks a little goofy, but that's just in general. Anytime we make anybody fly in movies, they tend to look a little goofy. Part of me was like, we should have just went back old school and done miniatures, because like those miniatures look like pretty cool. Like put a little Cynthia Erivo doll on a string, like that would have been cool. But this song, okay, so Defying Gravity is doing so many things at once, because one, it's a conflict song, because it is, you know, Elphaba and Glinda basically accepting like, yeah, I'm not going with you. You're going to have to do this on your own. And like how heartbreaking that is. But it is also an I want song that turns into an I will song halfway through, which I think is why all of us get so caught up on it, because it's one thing to yearn with these characters the way that you would, you know, Ariel in Little Mermaid has an I want song that we're all like, yeah, I do want you to like be where the people are, of course. And then halfway through Defying Gravity, she's like, yeah, I want to be there, but also no, I'm doing it because I can't depend on any of you. So I'm doing it myself and y'all are going to have to deal with it. And I think that it then transcends into a rallying cry for all of us to do the same in our own lives. Like, don't just want, do. And that's why we get so emotionally invested, because she's doing the thing that all of us wish that we could do. And she's singing it and she's loud and she's facing off, you know, all of the who will eventually be the Winky guards. And like, she's, you know, saying goodbye to the people that she has like dreamt her entire life of impressing and realizing they ain't shit, and like how heartbreaking that is, and not letting it get her down, but instead motivate her. Like, that's so inspiring. And I think that's why. And also just it's one of the most vocally difficult songs in like the musical theater canon. And so then it's just like you're overwhelmed with how impressive it is. Like, yeah, Stephen Schwartz has even said that he's glad that they split the movie in two, because anything after Defying Gravity immediately feels anticlimactic, because it is like it's meant to be so big that the curtain goes down and then you go to intermission and go, well, goddamn, I got to come back for see what happens in act two. Like, that's what it's built for. And so, yeah, ending the movie on like the literal high note, it's like, yeah, that was smart. That's a very smart choice. How do you come back from that? How do you follow that?
Yeah, there's no way. And that's why I'm a little worried about part two. But yeah, we'll see. I'll reserve judgment, because I prejudged this movie to my own detriment. So it was really funny to me that I was crying during the part of the movie that looked worse than any other section. Like at the very end of Defying Gravity, she's flying around on the broomstick and the monkeys are going wild, and like there's all this chaos happening and everything looks pretty wonky there. But I was like, damn it, this music is so good that it's still getting me. And it makes
damn
it look
you,
like
Stephen
I'm like
Schwartz.
Yeah, it makes it look like that I'm just weeping at like the glory of this CGification of what's going on. But it was really just the music that got me so well right there. But
yeah.
Okay. So any closing thoughts about Wicked that we didn't get to yet?
I really think that the change they made with Bo and Yang's character, that character is usually a girl. I think that change was really smart, and I love his little quips that just sort of pop in here and there. Bo and Yang knows what he's doing, and I think that he is currently going to be like the next SNL actor to really pop off and branch out into some really cool stuff.
Yeah, that was great. That was really enjoyable little it was like just the right amount too. I think they easily could have gone overboard with that, but it was, I think they hit that balance correct there. Any other aspects of the thing that we didn't really talk about? I feel like we covered a lot.
I think I'm hoping in my heart of hearts that since they're, you know, editing part two for next year, I hope they hear all of the discussions people have had about the color grading. And you know what? Just do it. Just color grade it. Just do it.
What do you mean? What's going on there? Is there some sort of controversy about it?
No, the only controversy is that some of the scenes look ugly because they look like they haven't been color graded. And it's washing people out. Just for part two, just do it. Just do it. It doesn't have to look consistent with part one. Just do it.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about Wicked Part 1 at slashfilm.com. I will link to our review, which is negative, by the way. So if you listen to this whole thing sort of gritting your teeth at the two of us praising this film and want a more negative reaction to it, check out our review from Whitney Siebold at slashfilm. And then I'm going to link to BJ's piece about why the decision to split this movie into two is actually a good move. So check that out in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.